ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 5 एंटाइटल्ड नारदास टीचिंग्स टू वसुदेव। टेक्स्ट नंबर 3। यम एषम पुरुषम साक्षात् यमेषां पुरुषं साक्षात् आत्मप्रभवम् ईश्वरम् आत्मप्रभवम् ईश्वरम् न भजन्ति अवजानन्ति न भजन्ति अवजानन्ति स्थानाद् भ्रष्टा पतन्त्यद स्थानाद् भ्रष्टा पतन्त्यद य एषां पुरुषं साक्षात् आत्मप्रभवम् ईश्वरम् न भजन्ति अवजानन्ति स्थानाद् भ्रष्टा पतन्त्यद। जयेषां पुरुषं साक्षात् आत्मप्रभवमीश्वरम् न भजन्त्यवजन्तिष्टापतन्त्यदः। मतीश जयेषां पुरुषं आत्मप्रभवमीश्वरम् यह वन हु एशाम ऑफ देम पुरुषम द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड साक्षात डायरेक्टली आत्म प्रभवम द सोर्स ऑफ देयर ओन क्रिएशन ईश्वरम द सुप्रीम कंट्रोलर न डू नॉट भजन्ति वर्शिप अवजानन्ति डिसरिस्पेक्ट स्थानात् फ्रॉम देयर पोजिशन भ्रष्टा फॉलन पतन्ति दे फॉल अधः डाउन। ट्रांसलेशन इफ एनी ऑफ द मेंबर्स ऑफ द फोर वर्णास एंड फोर आश्रमास फेल टू वर्शिप or intentionally disrespect the personality of Godhead, who is a source of their own creation, they will fall down from their position into a hellish state of life. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The words na bhajanti in this verse refer to those who out of ignorance do not worship the Supreme Lord. Whereas the word avajananti refers to those who have actually been informed of the supreme position of the Lord, but still show him disrespect. It has already been described that the four spiritual and occupational orders of life are generated from the body of the Lord. In fact, the Supreme Lord is the source of everything, as described in Bhagavad Gita 10.8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Those who foolishly do not inquire into the position of the personality of Godhead, as well as those who disrespect the Lord in spite of having heard of his transcendental position, will certainly fall down from the Varnashram Dharma system, as described by the words Stanad Brashta. The words Patanti Adaha indicate that one who falls from the Varnashram system will have no means of avoiding sinful activities, nor will such a person receive any credit for performing sacrifice, and thus he will gradually sink down into the lower and lower species of life in hellish conditions. Srila Vishnajagati Thakur has pointed out that the original cause of offending the Lord and falling down from one's position is not one's learning how to properly worship a bona fide spiritual master. One who is trained to offer respectful obeisances and worship to the bona fide spiritual master automatically offers proper worship to the Supreme Lord. Without the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master, even a so-called religious man will gradually become atheistic, offend the Lord by foolish speculations, and fall into a hellish condition of life. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has pointed out that the Purusha mentioned in this verse is Lord Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who is glorified in the Purusha Shukta prayers. If one is proud of his high social position and enviously thinks that the Lord is also a creation of nature and that there is no absolute entity who is the origin of all living entities, then such a puffed up fool will certainly fall down from the Varnashram system and become just like an unregulated animal. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Seeking the blessings of all devotees to speak something on this very auspicious beginning of the Kartik Mass. Very, very fortunate that somehow I got the opportunity to speak on this auspicious day. So this verse, of course, is a very, very special verse, specifically the purport that the disciples of His Divine Grace have written. It emphasizes on a very important spiritual principle of our lives. So here, in the purport, it is mentioned that the original cause of offending the Lord is not learning how to worship a bona fide spiritual master. And that is a very important principle of our spiritual lives. Especially when we... especially when we are trying to practice sadhana bhakti, the concept of the bona fide spiritual master and worshipping the bona fide spiritual master is highly important and relevant. So we'll discuss in that context of whatever we can learn today in today's purports. So Uttanapad had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. And similarly in our life also, there are two aspects to life. One is Ruchi and one is Niti. Ruchi indicates things that we are attracted to. Temptations, facilities, things like that. And Niti indicates principles that we follow in life. So generally, if you have discrimination, then you understand how much importance to give to Niti and how much importance to give to Ruchi. Unfortunately, people tend to sacrifice Niti and give more priority to Ruchi. And that creates most of the problems in life. Turning towards God, rather turning towards Niti or principles of life, prioritizing principles of life, is what the Bhagavatam teaches us. But many times, as we live our lives, instead of prioritizing the Niti or principles, we tend to prioritize Ruchi or thoughts of enjoyment, you know, experiencing happiness in this world, material happiness. So Ruchi tends to bring us material happiness, but Niti brings us discrimination, viveka. And that viveka brings us spiritual prosperity. And therefore, between truth and false, we need to really have a very discriminative line. And that's what the spiritual master's role is about. A shadow looks much bigger than a person. So generally, when you look at truth, truth remains as it is, but the untruth takes different shapes, colors, and forms. So generally in life, when we look at the principles of enjoyment, they take a lot of shapes. And the truth, which is satya, which doesn't have too many shapes. Like if you look at a sadhaka's life, what is the variety in a sadhaka's life? Not too much variety, very limited variety. But when we focus on that limited variety that is there in our spiritual lives, whether it is a process of chanting, whether it is a process of hearing, whether it is a process of reading, you don't find too much variety in it. But if you go to the material world has lots of variety. So shadow generally tends to have lots of shapes and sizes, and I mean, if you just observe shadows, it's very fantastic because it just gives so much dimensions to a small human being, you know. Depending on how the light is projected, if the light is projected from below, there's a different type of shadow. If the light is projected from top, there's a different type of shadow. From the sides, there's a different type of shadow. And the sizes of the shadows are unlimited. But the person is exactly the same. The person's size doesn't change ever. So similarly, the principles of life based on which our spirituality is based, they never change. But the shadows of this world, the material elements, they keep changing in size all the time. The question is whether our attraction is to the shadows or whether our attraction is to God, to the principles. Whether our attraction is to Ruchi or our attraction is to Niti. That is what spiritual life is all about. The speciality of devotional service, the process of bhakti, is that we use whatever we have to practice bhakti. So use whatever weapon you have to fight the bad qualities. So that means in the process of bhakti, there is no fear, because it's not that you have to worry about what you don't have. Generally, in this world, people are always worried about what they don't have. And they use that as an excuse not to practice bhakti. Like, for example, a rich person goes to a saintly person and he says, I have money, but I'm very sick. If only I get good health, then I can do bhakti. A poor person goes and says, I am poor. If only I have money, then I can practice bhakti. So every person is saying that what I don't have, if I have, I'll practice bhakti. But the principle of bhakti by itself is that whatever you have, use it and fight. Practice bhakti. Like in the Ramayana, we find the monkey army, when they went to fight in the war, they didn't have any weapons. Ravan's army was sophisticated weapons. The monkeys, what they took? Stones and trees. Whatever they could get their hands on, they used to fight. And if they didn't get stones and sticks, they used their nails and teeth. So bhakti is a principle where you have to fight against demons, fight against anarthas. But to fight against anarthas, you don't need anything extra. Whatever God has given you, use that and fight. And therefore, we don't really need anything extra to be able to fight in the process of bhakti. And therefore, the one who teaches us to fight and the one who helps us to fight is a bona fide spiritual master. The one who is trained to worship the spiritual master automatically offers proper worship to the Supreme Lord. That's what this purport implies. So why do we need a guru? So somebody, he asked a person, why do you need a guru? The need for a guru is a very simple need. If water has to be heated, you can't put water on fire directly. You need a vessel first. And the vessel will hold the water, and you heat the vessel, the water will get heated up. Similarly, for us to connect with Krishna, who is like fire, we can't jump into fire. We will get burnt very badly, or we will lose our existence practically. We need somebody who is an intermediary who can actually help us connect with that supremely fiery element of Krishna. And that's what the role of a spiritual master is. He kind of helps us deal with something that is really intensely fiery in a way that we can handle. So, a sadhaka has his own limitations on how much one can take up spiritual life. Because the sadhaka is always in great fear. And the spiritual master's role is to help us overcome this fear. And the spiritual master does that by showing it himself. There are two examples I would like to give. First, I'll take one example from the Ramayana. And then I'll take one example from Krishna Leela to show how the Supreme Lord and his devotees actually help us in dealing with the material world. In the Ramayana, we find Angad, when it comes to cross the ocean is compared to many things. The ocean is compared to a huge thing that we have to cross, the whole ocean of cycle of birth and death. It is also compared to the abhimana, the pride that you have of the body. It's called deha abhimana. It's compared to the huge pride that we have that we are the physical body. So it's an ocean that we have to cross. So Angad, when this ocean came in front, the 800 miles ocean, he said, I can jump, but I can't come back. Why he said he can jump but he can't come back? Because he can jump to the other side, to Lanka. What does Lanka represent? Lanka represents the golden city. It represents the land of temptations. Las Vegas or anything of that sort. One way ticket. People tend to go there, but you can't come back. You tend to stay there only. So Angad said, I can go there for sure. I can jump one way. But there's no guarantee I'll come back. Because I might get stuck over there with the temptations of that is there in Lanka. But the person who actually jumped, Hanumanji, he jumped. First thing he went and did is burnt Lanka.
So that means a person who is highly detached will go to Lanka and remain unaffected by Lanka. And not only remain unaffected to Lanka, the way they remain unaffected to Lanka is first burn all the material temptations. So if Lanka is burned, there is nothing to really get tempted about over there. You know. So Hanuman went and first burned Lanka, destroyed Lanka. And the very thing that the opulence didn't really matter to him. So Hanumanji represents a personality who is very intelligent in dealing with matter. When he went to Lanka, he went in a very tiny small size. Why did he go in a tiny size? It's not that he was scared. He was scared of all the demons and therefore he took a very tiny size. Hanumanji represents that sadhaka who doesn't go and seek for unnecessary fights. There are already too many fights in life. Why do you go and seek unnecessary fights? Hanuman went to Lanka not to fight over there. He went to find Sita. So if he went in the regular form, there would be hundreds of millions of these demons who would come to attack him and he would not be able to find Sita at all. So he went in a tiny size to indicate that when we are going to a mission, when we are going to practice our spiritual lives, don't take up unnecessary fights. Just focus on what you are going there for. So when we go on a mission, when we are practicing our spiritual lives, many times we unnecessarily take up burdens and anxieties on ourselves, which is actually not needed only. We just need to focus on what we are going there for. So when Hanumanji met Lankini, the first person he entered when he entered Lanka, Lankini represents intense attachments. So Hanumanji didn't have a very interesting conversation with Lankini. What Hanumanji did was he slapped her very tightly. One tight slap. And that's all. That was whole. So when Lankini fell down, when she got up, she was completely normal. She was completely surrendered and submissive. When she was standing before, she was absolutely proud and arrogant. But with one slap of Hanumanji, she fell down. And then when she got up, she became completely submissive and humble. What does it indicate? Indicates that a satsang program, when you go to a satsang program, your false ego needs to be slapped at least once. That's what a satsang program is meant for. It's not just meant to boost your false ego. It's not just meant to entertain you, but it is meant to give you one tight slap at least. So when you enter a satsang program, you should be at least sleeping once. Such a tight slap that you fall down. And then when you get up, at least one of your attachments should go away. And that's what the purpose of satsang with personalities like Hanumanji is meant for. And therefore, Lankini, she went through a transformation with one tight slap. So generally, when people feel obliged towards others, the connection between a spiritual master and a disciple is a connection of a little hard-hitting thoughts or hard-hitting messages. Like Krishna, when he spoke to Arjun, the whole Bhagavad Gita. So when Arjun spoke about tyaga or renunciation, he starts laughing at him. So what kind of tyaga is he talking about? And so that is the first slap that Krishna gave him. So Arjun felt, Krishna will feel very, very proud that, wow, he is ready to renounce the whole kingdom and go to the forest. Krishna slapped him practically when he spoke about leaving and going away. And then when he spoke about, and the second slap Krishna gives, tells him that he's speaking like a pandit when you're actually a fool. So first he slapped his detachment, and then second he slapped his learning, thinking that he is scholarly, his understanding is great. So that means satsang is supposed to hit at our belief systems. Satsang is supposed to hit at our basic belief systems that are self-made by us. Like Shalya in the Mahabharata we find, Shalya, he goes to join Yudhishthira in the war. But before the war, Duryodhan feeds him, gives him one meal. And he just thinks that I've eaten Duryodhan's food, now I can't, betray him. I have to fight for him only. So in the process of thinking that I have to, you know, I've eaten his food, therefore I have to change my sides. He forgets that Yudhishthira has fed him so many times. So many times, we become obliged that somebody has fed me once. But we forget that God has fed me millions of lifetimes. And what to, I mean, generally, the question of loyalty and the question of what is right and what is wrong, which it's a very misconstrued and it's a very distorted understanding that we have. And most of the times, our mind makes up some funny understanding of what loyalty is. The same thing in material life. We tend to be very loyal to material life and we tend to be very casual in spiritual life. And the reason we tend to be very loyal in material life, just see what science has provided me. Just see what the world has provided me. But we forget that that God has provided us our life itself. And then we forget the loyalty towards that. So the whole concept of satsang is supposed to be helping you first fall in your concepts and then rise on another level, rise on a different platform. Lankini first fell and then she rose. When she rose, she was a different person. So similarly, satsang is supposed to hit at your pride, make you fall, and then when you get up, you have a different type of pride, which is known as true pride. The spiritual master's role is to help us understand and deal with that internal conflict that we are going through in our lives, which prevents us from practicing our spiritual lives. Here in one of the sentences says, one who is proud of his high social position enviously thinks that Lord is also creation of nature. Such a person will become like animals living an unregulated life. So this concept of ahankar or pride, which makes you envious of God, is one of the most dangerous concepts in spiritual life. It's considered to be the fundamental problem, a fundamental flaw in a person from which prevents him from becoming a sadhaka. One time a king welcomed a saint by spreading a costly carpet in front of him. So the saint walked over the carpet and started jumping on, stamping with it with his feet. The king asked him, why did you stamp with your feet? The saint said, I saw your opulent carpet. I wanted to break your pride. Therefore, I stamped on it. So the king said, are you breaking my pride of opulence with your pride of renunciation? So many times, one pride may be used to break some other pride. But the fact is that spiritual life is breaking all prides. Maharaj once, Radhana Swami Maharaj, he once made a very interesting statement. He said, one should not want to be highly proud of one's material attachments, but one should not be proud of one's detachment also. So, not being proud of material attachment is one aspect, but not being proud of detachment, that is a more important aspect. Many times we become easily detached from material opulences, but we become attached to the concept of detachment itself. And both are highly dangerous for a spiritual practitioner. So, the concept of pride is something that the spiritual master is expert in dealing with. So, we're going to take up a section from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Damodar Leela, where Narad Muni helps to deal with the pride of Nalakuer and Manigriv. And through the process of how the dealings between Narad Muni, Nalakuer, Manigriv and Krishna is, some amazing concepts of how a spiritual master helps us in our life is revealed. In fact, Krishna, when he's in his discussion with Nalakuer and Manigriv, he reveals how actually he is not doing anything for them, but actually Narad Muni is doing everything for them. And that's what the role of a spiritual master's life is. One time, there was a discussion of who is the most unhappy person in this world. Some people said this, some people said that. Different people are saying different things. Somebody said that if you are poor and diseased, you are unhappy. Finally, one man said something which is really interesting. And this really is what makes a person unhappy. He said, a person who is jealous and envious He is the most unhappy person in the world. Because he suffers when everybody is doing well. Because his mind, there is no peace at all. And the more we are envious and the more we are jealous of somebody else's success and somebody else's happiness, the more internally we suffer. And that's what the concept of ahankar is and the concept of envy is. When a person is highly envious, he just wants to feel peaceful when others are all miserable. And in the process of trying to make others miserable, he himself becomes miserable. And unless we deal with both this pride and envy in our lives, we just can't go ahead in our spiritual journeys. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this whole story of Nalakuvar and Manigreev, it begins with the whole Damodar Leela where Mother Yashoda ties up Krishna and Krishna drags the ukkal, the wooden grinding motor, towards these two trees. So these two trees have been standing over there for, you know, about 20,000 years. And the twin trees, they're called as Yamala Arjuna trees. They were named after one of the Gopas, one of friends of Krishna known as Arjun Gopa. They were huge trees, massive trees, but both of them were tied at their roots. So a tree is free on top, but it is tied below. It can't move. So Krishna was thinking, when he saw those trees, he was thinking, I am just like those trees. Now I know what a conditioned soul feels to be tied up. So Krishna was tied up right at that point of time, Damodar Leela, you know. So Krishna was looking at those trees and was thinking, the conditioned soul feels restrained by the ropes of material nature, the three modes of material nature. Similarly, today I am tied up by these ropes that are tying me up. And therefore, Krishna was thinking, maybe if I do the good deed of freeing those two sons of Nalakuvar and of Kuvera, maybe I will also get free. So he said, let me do one good deed. So Krishna was performing two roles simultaneously here. So he was doing the first role of an angry boy who has been unjustly punished. And simultaneously was doing the role of an omniscient God who is planning to liberate the souls, liberate the two trees. So while he was bound by the love of his devotees, he continues to give liberation to others. So this is a story of how two loafers became lovers of Krishna. So when Nalakuvar and Manigri were having bath in the Mandakini Ganga, they were doubly intoxicated. One was they were intoxicated by the Varuni that they were drinking, and the second they were intoxicated by the pride that they had already drunk. Intense pride. So double intoxication. You can imagine what their level of intoxication was. And they were having bath in the Ganga. This is that too, the original Ganga, the Mandakini Ganga in the heavenly planets. That means the Ganga in this world is definitely pure, but the Ganga in the heavenly planets is much more purer. Lesser pollution, you know, more closer proximity to the original source, lesser people adding their contamination into the rivers. So Mandakini Ganga was a highly pure form of Ganga. And these two guys were having bath over there. And while having bath over there, instead of they getting purified, they're getting more contaminated. So it is not just by staying in a river or dipping in a river, purification happens. Shaubari Muni, he was sitting inside the Yamuna River. He was not just having a bath in the Yamuna River three times. He was staying inside the Yamuna River. In spite of staying inside the Yamuna River, he didn't get purified enough. So that means just staying in these holy places, holy rivers, taking a bath in these holy places is not going to purify you of your contamination. What is really going to purify you of your contamination is when you contemplate on the mistakes you make. That's what is the whole concept of purification. So Narad Muni, when he saw these two people in this highly intoxicated state and in a very bad shape, he realized that just pious bathing is not enough for these people. They need a seed of devotional service. And Narada, he thought that the intoxication of liquor wears away with time. And next day morning, they will be okay. Intoxication of liquor will go away. But the intoxication of pride does not wear away with time. Next day morning, it's not that pride will go away, you know. So He said, rather than me helping them deal with their intoxication of drinking the Varuni, I need to help them deal with the intoxication of pride. And only when their pride is curbed, they will be eligible to practice bhakti. So sometimes, when a father wants to feed a sleeping son sweet rice, he pinches the boy and wakes him up. So now you might think, "Arey, what is this? Father is pinching child, you know, he's sleeping so peacefully." But unless the child gets up, how will he get the fortune of eating sweet rice? So sometimes, when the need is there, the spiritual master pinches the disciple. And that pinching may seem to be very painful. But the spiritual master has to pinch so that this fellow becomes eligible to eat the sweet rice, which is the process of bhakti. So Narada, he cursed the demigods. The curse was just to bring them to their senses. Before cursing them, Narada spoke inspirational words to remove their ignorance. And unfortunately, many times people who are highly intoxicated and are in no position to hear, no position to understand anything. So Narada Muni realized that a person who is ready for devotional qualification, what is the greatest disqualification of spiritual life? Prosperity is not the disqualification of spiritual life. If somebody who is highly wealthy is devoid of pride, they are very much qualified to practice spiritual life. They are very much qualified to receive mercy. So the mood of devotion, the mood of a devotee is that he is in the mood of akinchanatvam. That means a person feels like a beggar. I don't have anything. And therefore, when a person is in that mood, that I need mercy, in the mood of being a beggar, that is when he can actually receive the mercy of bhakti. So these people were so highly intoxicated, so full in themselves, they just feel, I don't need bhakti. I don't need the process of bhakti. So first thing Narada Muni made, he made them poor. How did he make them poor? Curse them to become trees. As trees, what can you hold on to? You can't even hold on to your own fruits. Somebody else takes them away. So as trees, they couldn't hold on to anything. Neither could they hold on to their leaves. Neither could they hold on to their fruits. Neither could they hold on to their flowers. So because they couldn't hold on to anything, they naturally couldn't hold on to their pride also. And naturally, because somebody who cannot hold on to one's own pride, because there's nothing to be proud of as a tree. That too, standing naked without any clothes. People use tree bark to make clothes for themselves. The trees don't have any clothes for themselves. And Narada Muni, he wanted to bring them to pure devotion through poverty. And the concept of poverty that Narada Muni introduced into their life is a concept of being poor of their pride. So, Nalakuvar and Manigriv, they were part-time devotees. Demigods, you know, Karma Mishra Bhaktas, essentially they were doing their duties as devatas. But along with doing the duties, their priority was fun. So spiritual life is serious fun. You can have your fun, no problem. But as long as you are serious about your spiritual life, you can have a little bit of fun. You know, actually Prabhupada, somebody asked him, Prabhupada, what do you do for recreation? Prabhupada said, we only do recreation. Sometimes we do some work. So having fun is not a problem in spiritual life. But the fun should be serious fun. There should be a serious element to the fun. So Nalakuvar and Manigriv, they were having fun, but the problem was their fun was not at all serious type. Their fun was frivolous fun. And that's the kind of fun that is not allowed in Krishna consciousness. So Narada Muni had no problem in they having fun. Krishna and his friends are having fun all the time. But their fun is rooted in spirituality, rooted in the process of intense, deep devotion. And that fun is very much encouraged in spiritual life. So Narada Muni, he gave them the opportunity to become from part-time devotees to full-time devotees. So part-time Karma Mishra Bhaktas to actually pure Nishkam Bhaktas. And Narada Muni, he gave them the opportunity to actually perfect their lives. Narada Muni thought eventually that I should not give them a curse that does not give them bhakti. So Narada Muni gave them a curse that gives them bhakti. So when great saintly people curse, even if they speak negative things, those negative things will actually be very positive for your life. So we apparently tend to think, array, what is this? Every second person is cursing. So many people ask me, you know, scriptures are full of curses only. You know, what's going on? You know, every person is cursing another person. If you read Mahabharata, if you read the Ramayana, if you read some of our Puranas, the whole thing is filled with cursing and counter-cursing, you know. So what is this whole concept of cursing? So when Narad Muni is cursing Nalakuvar and Manigriv, he does not want to give them a curse that does not bring them bhakti. So he gave them a curse that brings them devotion. So as soon as Narad Muni gives his curse on Nalakuvar and Manigriv, he goes to the Lord and he begs forgiveness. He tells the Lord, "My dear Lord, I curse these two people. Kindly forgive me for cursing them." So the conduct of a pure devotee is that a pure devotee acts as an instrument of the Lord. And even though he is acting as an instrument of the Lord, he still feels guilty for cursing someone who deserves it. This is the mood of a pure devotee. So a spiritual master may sometimes chastise a disciple. But that chastisement is to help the person become a better devotee, a pure devotee. But when the spiritual master chastises, the first thing he does is that he feels bad himself. And then, after chastising, he makes sure he does ample things to make a person happy. To make a person, you know, a little mentally peaceful. And that's the kindness of the spiritual master. The spiritual master doesn't have to do it at all, actually. Because that curse of the spiritual master is not something negative, but is actually something to help you become even more intensely oriented in your spiritual life. And so Krishna, when he saw these two trees, so he dragged the motor. He was pulling the motor and something interesting happened as he was pulling the motor. So as he was pulling the motor, sometimes the motor moved on its own and sometimes he pulled it. When the ropes and the motor came in touch with Krishna, they assumed spiritual forms. And therefore, they could act according to their own will. So that means both of them wanted to serve Krishna also. So the rope that bound Krishna, the rope was thinking that why should Krishna do the hard work of pulling the motor? And the motor was thinking, why should Krishna do the hard work of pulling the rope and me? So they both decided, let's help him. So they started rolling themselves, you know. The rope started pulling the motor started rolling on its own. So sometimes Krishna would pull and sometimes they would go on their own. So when Krishna went between the two trees, the motor got stuck. So, when they experienced their first touch with Krishna, Nalakuvar and Manigriv, their touch with Krishna didn't happen directly. Their touch with Krishna happened through the motor, through the wooden grinding motor. There are different people who are instrumental in putting us in touch with Krishna. Narada first and the wooden grinding motor second. So, Nalakuvar and Manigriv directly did not touch Krishna. They came in touch with Krishna through somebody else, through two people, not even one. You know. This is what parampara is about. So parampara is Narad Muni cursed and went away. And somebody else came and touched the wooden grinding motor who was touching Krishna. So essentially, it may be possible that we may never be directly in touch with Krishna. But at least we should be in touch with somebody who's in touch with Krishna. Or at least it's somebody who's in touch with somebody who's in touch with Krishna. You know, and that's the whole concept of parampara. So Krishna came, he had the desire to deliver the two trees. He used the motor as an instrument and the motor touched the two trees. And as soon as the motor touched the two trees, they started trembling in ecstasy. The boys who were on top of the hill, so there's like a small hillock where Krishna rolled down the motor to come to the two trees. So the boys that were on top of the hill, they were looking at Krishna rolling down the motor and going. So they were enjoying like anything. I mean, they saw that Krishna is trapped. They felt very happy. So, you know, they were just having fun. You just see Krishna is trapped over there. And they were just clapping on each other's hands. So they were just having fun. So the boys are thinking, Krishna really knows how to get in trouble. I mean, can you imagine, you know, first of all, he got in trouble by getting tied up with Mother Yashoda, you know, with the whole mess that he did inside the house. And now, that is not enough. He's pulled that motor and he's taking it all over the place. As if that is not enough, he's gone and got stuck between the two trees. Now he doesn't know how to get out and how to, you know, leave the place. So the boys are just thinking that, let's see how he gets himself out of this mess. And Krishna started smiling. So he sat down, turned a little bit, faced the trees, and so the rope was in his hand. The rope was a little loose, basically. The rope was in his hand, and he pulled the rope to see if the rope is tight enough, you know. When he saw that the rope is tight enough, he pulled the rope a little bit, and he left the rope. When he left the rope, the motor pushed against the tree, and it went a little backwards. And Krishna actually fell down, you know, because it was like a little inertia. And the boy started laughing like anything. And then the motor, when he realized that Krishna is struggling too much to pull me, the motor started putting strength of its own to push. So Krishna was not so much pulling, but the motor was pushing. And so the ropes, now they decided, we will not become slack. Because when we became slack last time, Krishna fell down. So the motor and the ropes, they started assisting Krishna in his pastimes. And then Krishna, he started pulling. When Krishna's pull, the motor's force, and the rope's tightness, they got together. Intense noise, a massive noise, and the two trees just collapsed. And interestingly, the two trees fell in such a way that they fell in this direction, in opposite directions. They didn't fall straight on Krishna. So Krishna was right in between. The two trees fell in this direction so that Krishna was absolutely unharmed. And as soon as the two trees fell, the motor came running and touched Krishna's feet. And then Krishna patted the motor like a calf, you know, like Krishna would pat a small calf. He did a good job, you know. And then the tumultuous sound of the two trees falling was so massive that practically all the children, they got scared. They were very scared of what's happening over here, because they knew Krishna is in trouble, but now they realize that Krishna's life can be in danger. Now it's no more a joke. You know, they came running to see if Krishna needs help. And interestingly, as the boys decided to get up to run, they got stuck. They were not able to move only. They became paralyzed practically. Their eyes were able to move. Their faces were able to move. But their body was stuck. Because Krishna didn't want them to come. There would be a rasabhas. If Krishna came, if the boys came there, he would not be able to have his discussion with the Nalakuvar and Manigriv. You know. So he got them stuck over there. And Krishna had his discussion with Nalakuvar and Manigriv. So Nalakuvar and Manigriv began to seek forgiveness from Krishna. They offered their prayers to Krishna. And after repenting and asking for forgiveness, they realized that Krishna is not really interested in them, in their whole prayers and massive, complicated prayers that they are offering in Sanskrit and all. They saw what Krishna is doing. Krishna was pulling the motor towards himself, and when the motor would come, he would kick it away. Again, he would pull the motor, kick it away. So he found a new game. So these people are praying complicated prayers and, you know, really making Sanskrit vocabulary and really intensely trying to pray. Krishna was not interested only in their prayers. He was pulling the motor, kicking it away, pulling the motor, kicking it away. At that point of time, they realized Krishna doesn't want us to be here for too long, you know. So Krishna told them, go to your guru now, and by my grace, he will fulfill all your desires. And the demigods, they were completely confused, you know, with Krishna's instructions. Go to your guru and he'll fulfill all your desires. Essentially, Krishna told them, if Narad Muni had not desired, I would never have given you all mercy. I would have never shown you all mercy, because it is only the source, only by the will of the spiritual master, of a guru, that the Supreme Lord shows his mercy to a living entity. And therefore, the whole idea, whole concept in this particular section of the story is that a sadhu's blessing, in whatever form it comes, whether it comes in the form of a chastisement, whether it comes in the form of a correction, whether it comes in the form of a curse, whether it comes in the form of a blessing, whatever form it comes, it's a blessing. And that is the blessing that actually helps us connect with Krishna. Krishna blessed them to receive everything by the grace of their guru. That means everything that we receive in our spiritual lives doesn't come directly from Krishna. Everything that we get in our spiritual lives comes through the grace of the spiritual master. Here in this verse that we are reading today, the whole point is a person's stability in spiritual life depends on his stability of his connection with the spiritual master and the way he understands the spiritual master's instructions and the spiritual master's desire. And a person who really connects with the spiritual master in this way, by accepting everything that the spiritual master offers him, whether it is chastisement, whether it is correction, whether it is blessings, in a grateful heart, with a grateful mind, that is a person who can actually stay stable in spiritual life and continue practicing. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I would like to seek blessings of all the devotees. In case I have spoken something wrong, please forgive me. And if I have spoken something valuable to your lives, it will be my greatest pleasure. कृतराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की, श्रील प्रभुपाद की।